right, it is my absolute honor to welcome you to the very first episode of the A-Suite Podcast, where UCLA Anderson MBA students are coming together to bring you the best insight on industry deep dives, the MBA experience in general, and so much more. Now, to kick things off, this first episode, we wanted to do something a little bit more fun. And so we dove into our childhood, we dove into our young adulthood, and we decided let's dissect Harry Potter and all it has to offer in relation to business. So today we have four of our board members, actually. We have Katie Schiff, Jody Christensen, Shruti Pandey, and John Lee. Now let's dive right into the world of Harry Potter, and we hope you enjoy.
Welcome, everyone, to the A-Suite Podcast. We're so glad you decided to listen to us today. We are just four MBA students who really love Harry Potter, minus one MBA student who doesn't know that much about Harry Potter, which equals three MBA students and one who doesn't know much about Harry Potter. So we're excited to be here with you today. One of our ideas when starting this podcast was connecting things in pop culture in our lives that we really love to the lessons of business school, making them more digestible, making more sense to us in our lives. And what is more important to us than Harry Potter? I personally can't think of much. Maybe my cats. But other than that, Harry Potter. So what we wanted to do today was celebrate the seven Harry Potter novels and the beautiful lessons that they are in the power of groups over individuals, the importance of transparency within a successful organization, and of course, that love is the most powerful magic of all. So Shruti, hi. Jody, John, we're all here to talk Harry Potter. Shruti, I know you're a big fan. Tell us, like, why you love Harry Potter and the first time you were exposed and why it really connected to you.
Thank you, Katie. Hello, everyone. I love Harry Potter, and why not, right? Like, there's no reason. And for those who want to really want to hear me speak, be specific about it, I think it's the journey of this child who, you know, was founded in this random location in London and just realized the truth about his life and, you know, had no idea what to do about it. And then the entire force came behind him, reinstills that faith that, you know, even if we decide to take upon any cause in our lives, we can do anything with it and we can raise an army around it. So that faith and that courage is something that Harry Potter gave me all through life. So the journey began with this one book, which was a pirated version from a random street flea market. And it was lying in my cupboard for the longest time, but one day it was like, okay, I have no books to read, so let me just open it up. And I think I never stopped reading.
So the book was lying in a cupboard just like Harry did for the first 11 years of his life.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful. Awesome. John, you are our Harry Potter newbie, yes, in a way.
Yes, so I am.
Why are you here?
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't like Harry Potter? I'm definitely one of those people that haven't read all the books, unfortunately. More of the movie guy. And so it started with the Sorcerer's Stone, or some people say the Philosopher's Stone. But I just remember the scene where they're playing chess with, like, the actual moving pieces that are, like, trying to kill each other. I thought that was really cool. But the idea of Harry Potter, I just love magic and this whole world that was created. And so I'm here to be the voice of those that don't necessarily know all the ins and outs of Harry Potter, but just enjoy the energy that it provides. So just happy to be here. And yeah.
Cool. So you'll have to represent the business student. We'll represent the Harry Potter fanatics.
Yes, okay. For sure.
Yeah. And then executive producer Jody, what's up?
Hey. Yeah, so Harry Potter, love it. Love it a lot. My first introduction to Harry Potter, I think all of us are about the age that, you know, we're like close to Harry's age, or we kind of grew up with the books. You know, kind of like imagined ourselves in Harry's shoes. The first time I got my hands on one of the books, I like read the first page, and now I don't remember if it was the first or second book, but the first page kind of describes, it must be the second book, kind of describes Dudley sitting on a chair and like his butt like kind of spilling over on either side of the chair. And I don't know if you remember that, but I was like, oh, I don't know about this book. This seems kind of weird. So I put the book down, and then we came back to it in school. My teacher read it aloud to us during our reading time. So I got to love it that way. And yeah, just a classic good versus evil hero's journey tale. Lots of great characters. I think there's a lot of underrated characters that have a lot to teach us. So every time I read it, I get something out of it.
Yeah, totally. And you know, the last time I reread Harry Potter, and I actually in elementary school, it was a rainy day, and on rainy days we would watch movies, and we watched Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. So that was my first exposure, was actually movie one. Then I read books 1 through 4, which were the only ones out at that point. And then ever since then, like, was it the midnight releases and everything, and never looked back. But the last time I reread Harry Potter was after I graduated from undergrad, and it felt so different reading it as an adult. I was so impressed with the adult themes, and I saw the story so differently. One thing that kind of blew my mind was when I first read Chamber of Secrets as a kid, I thought it was so boring and a little bit scary with the snake in the wall. And then as an adult, I was like, oh God, this book is incredible. Harry is so isolated. Everyone is against him. And just how is he going to recover from this? Umbridge was no longer just like that villain you hated, but you knew someone like that in your life. You had a terrible boss or a terrible teacher who reminded you of Umbridge. You could relate to that so much more as an adult reading it. So it's really cool to come back to it after a long time. And shout out to Binge Mode Harry Potter podcast. If anyone has ever listened to that and wants to go super deep into Harry Potter beyond what we do today, which we would spend hours on this if we could, but you wouldn't listen. So we're keeping it short today. Anywho, we're at UCLA Anderson, and the first class that we took was Leadership Foundations.
Leadership
Foundations, LF. And it was an intensive, so we only took it for 1 week. We had 3 5-hour lectures, and they jam-packed everything about leadership into those 3 days. And what we wanted to do today for our first podcast, since that was our first class, is compare some of the lessons from Leadership Foundations to the Harry Potter story. So let's jump right in, shall we? The Leadership Compass. John, do you want to explain the Leadership Compass?
Sure. There's the Leadership Compass, and we use that as like a framework for the Leadership Foundations class. And there were several main pillars, I guess we could call them, or directions, because it's a compass, I guess. So we had sense making, inventing, relating, and visioning. And those were like the 4 major keys of this Leadership Compass. And we kind of dove into the class using this as the general framework for how we approached our cases, approached our problems, and approached the situations that were given to us in class. And so I guess we're going to dive right into those and see where they coincide with Harry Potter, if they even do. They probably do. Mm-hmm. I mean, they definitely do. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes. Soon you listener will agree with us. All right. So we picked a leader who we thought is a great example of the 4 leadership compass directions. And who else better leader than Hermione Jean Granger of Harry Potter to represent all of the corners of the compass? So sense making, the first corner, is all about making sense of the world around you, being able to quickly adapt, take stock of what's happening so that you can lead your team to the best of your ability. So a couple of things for Hermione that really stood out to me is how she could just take everything around her, all these data inputs, and relay to them in such succinct ways to people around her. Like, she always was able to say, Ron, I can't believe you never read A Hogwarts, A History. They say that the ceiling changes to depict the weather outside or the mood of the whatever. And so she was always able to call that so quickly and use it to bring inspiration to others. And
Trudy, what other examples do you have for Hermione and her sense-making abilities?
I think being available with the right kind of background knowledge, you know, actually helps you be ahead of others. You can quickly learn from people, history, or in other words, people's mistakes, and, you know, find yourself in the same situation and make the better of it. So I think Hermione was a guiding light. She was their North Star in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah. Have you guys seen the thing that like renamed all the books to be Hermione Granger and instead of Harry Potter and? So it was like Hermione Granger and the time I saved Harry Potter from like a human eating plant. And just changed all of the names to be Hermione focus. Because she did save them every single book. One example I really love for sense making in particular is how in book 5, Harry, super down, Dolores Umbridge won't teach them defense against the dark arts. And the whole, all of the Gryffindors, bunch of the Ravenclaws, Hufflepuffs, none of the Slytherins because they're evil. and really down. And Sheen says, you know what, Harry, we need you to teach us. She was able to take stock of that situation, identify their best chance to learn, and not only bring up the idea, but motivate him and encourage him to actually create Dumbledore's army, start training everyone. And then Neville's able to stun people. And everybody can make a freaking expecto patronum patronus, and the fifth year was saved. So that's one of my favorite examples.
Yeah, I feel like now that I think about it, the movie series and the books would be a lot shorter if Hermione didn't exist. Like if she wasn't there, there wouldn't really be much of a movie, I feel. She would've definitely saved their butts a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the example that comes to mind for me is the basilisk. And she's the one who figures that out. I mean, Harry's the one who's always kind of in the middle of the action. But if she never figured out that it was a basilisk, like the school would have just shut down. Everyone would have gone home. That would be the end of that book and maybe the series. And yeah, I think that she's constantly, she's really putting things together, figuring things out, and then somehow Harry gets all the credit.
Aww.
Yes. So let's move on to Hermione and inventing, because the idea behind the basilisk is great, because she, you know, was in the library, trusty girl in the library. She had no shame about going to the library. And that is a lesson for you MBAs and like aspiring MBAs out there. Don't be ashamed of dedicating the time you need to achieve your goal. So if you need to spend more time in the library, at the cafe, studying for the GMAT, the GRE, rereading your essays, you do that. And you do not let someone like Ron make fun of you for not liking Quidditch. You do you. I digress. So inventing is the idea, like John said, of being able to come up with creative ideas and not just come up with them, but get your team on board with using them. My favorite Hermione example of this is her bag in book/movie 7. So she didn't tell anyone she was packed and ready to go. They got attacked at the wedding. They had to operate really quickly, and lucky for Ron and Harry, she was completely packed, had come up with incredible magic to shrink, to expand her bag, to keep so much stuff in there, books, a portrait, clothes, healing potion, and was just so on top of it. So that's my inventing for Hermione. Anybody else have a favorite?
Well, I think, so just a thought on this, I think we learned in our class about how these pillars all kind of relate to each other, and Hermione couldn't have figured out how to make her bag if she hadn't been in the library doing the sense making. So we see that it like it starts with one thing, but they all build on each other. You can't really be a good inventor if you aren't doing the other things as well in some respect. Her magical genius, obviously there's some innate skill that makes her really creative and innovative, but she also works really hard to just be excellent and proficient at magic.
Totally. It's so true, because she could have been what Reed Hastings of Netflix calls a brilliant jerk. And you never want to hire a brilliant jerk on your team, because while they are brilliant, they bring the team down and they detract from whatever brilliance they're having by not encouraging others or getting them on board with their ideas. So it ends up being unproductive to hire them. And so Hermione was able to be a brilliant star, a brilliant unicorn, not a brilliant jerk.
Building on Katie's point that she was a great team player, and being part of being an inventor or having that skill doesn't always mean you have to lead from the front. Sometimes you have to lead from the back. And she knew that it was about Harry Potter, but she never let it get in the way of, you know, trying to help him. And she used all her tools, all her knowledge to keep him up to, you know, speed and up to the level at which he has to deliver. So I felt that she was a very, very strong team player.
I love that you just said that. Like, it makes so much sense of how important it is to know what your role is on the team. And she understood what her role is and executed it like perfectly, like almost all the time, I feel. And the other thing that I felt was really cool is she's not only book smart. Like, we all like talked about how, mm-hmm. you know, she was in the background doing the studies, like understanding that, sharing with other people. But like, when push came to shove and she needed to like pull out a spell and save somebody, like, she whipped that out and she knows how to do her business, you know? And so I think that's a huge testament of, like, you know, we're MBAs. I feel like we're pretty versatile. Like, we're book smart. We can also apply things. Like, we got things going on. We all have a little bit of Hermione in us, I think. I like to think that. So yeah, no, I love that. I love that point. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's also interesting because it is really important to know your role on the team. Like you said, John, I think that is one of the hardest things for a new group working together to have. And if you think back to book one, they did not work well together. Hermione was crying in the bathroom all the time because they did not work well together. And they were fighting. It comes up again because, you know, I wouldn't mix love with teams necessarily. And the love between Ron and Hermione, probably not the best coworker relationship to have. Spoiler alert, they fall in love. But it does take them, I feel like, the first four books to get into a good working relationship. And I don't think they could have succeeded in book seven, actually defeating Voldemort. Also, spoiler alert, sorry.
You can't say his name. You're not allowed to say his name. What?
You totally can if you are not afraid of the Dark Lord. They would not have been able to get all the Horcruxes if they hadn't gone through the trial and tribulations of, like, trial by fire, learning how to work together. And they trusted each other by the time book seven came along. So even when Ron leaves, he's able to find his way back to them, also thanks to Dumbledore, and reunite the team so that they can be successful. Shall we do relating, the third pillar of the compass? We have a quote here. I think, Jody, this quote was from you.
Just because you have the emotional range of a teaspoon doesn't mean we all have.
Damn, girl.
She really lays it down. Let's see. This is the part where
Harry just kissed Cho.
And Cho is crying. And Ron is like, what is up with girls?
Why would she be crying? She should just be happy she got kissed. That is such a toxic masculine perspective to have, Ronald Weasley.
Wait, when did this happen again? Sorry, could you give a little more context? I'm like blurring on this part.
Yes. Flashback, book five, Order of the Phoenix. It's Christmas time. They're under the mistletoe in the Room of Requirement. Cho is crying while looking at a photo of dear deceased Cedric. Harry comforts her with his lips.
Harry, you dog.
Yeah, and Hermione, I think she does relating better than anybody in the book or books, because she can see from other people's perspectives and she can think about, you know, what is Cho feeling? What has she been through? Why might she be conflicted about liking Harry when she has recently lost someone that she really liked in a very traumatic way? And obviously when you're like a teenager, sometimes it's hard to be rational.
He probably does have the emotional range of a teaspoon. Like, I think it's actually an accurate.
No, I don't think she's being dramatic.
Well, so, okay, I still to this day am not completely clear on how old everyone is. So how old is everyone at this point? They like 15?
They're 15, 16. So you start Hogwarts at 11. So book one, they're 11. Two, they're 12. Three, 13.
Wow.
So this is book five.
Yeah, that's young.
Yeah, they're almost exploring. They're almost exploring each other.
There's a lot of teen angst and teen sexual repression at this point in the books and in the movies.
It's pretty wild to think that like they are able to navigate this. Obviously not necessarily in the best way, but I feel like I wasn't navigating this in this intensity at those ages. I don't know. That's just
You mean a dark wizard wasn't trying to kill you and your friends at age 15?
You know, No, that wasn't happening. You're right. Yeah, I guess.
But that's the beauty of Harry Potter, because yes, it's fantasy. All this is, of course, unbelievable. But everyone felt such strong feelings at this time in their lives. And still now, like when we go back and read it, you know, you feel like you're fighting immense odds and immeasurable odds, and everyone's against you and no one believes you. And you have to find your close friends to help you through that. The reluctant hero, which is Harry, and I think a great way to summarize the stories is you're reluctant to become that hero, but you have to. And maybe in the work world, you're reluctant to become the leader. Maybe it's not natural for you to want to be in control or in charge, speaking in front of people, but it's what's best for the team, best for the organization. And so it's thrust upon you and you see it through.
I also feel that Hermione was in a very difficult situation, because even though she did a good job relating with others, not many people related to her. I mean, she had to fight a lot of perception about herself. And which is also something that you face at that age as a girl, definitely. And so what we were discussing so far was actually that girls tend to mature faster than guys. So obviously their sense of relating happens earlier. But even if you forget that she was a girl, she just had a legacy of being a mudblood and being too intelligent to be cool. Or maybe being on the verge of being called a nerd, maybe.
And even her physical features were mocked by people who were not like dark Death Eaters, like people who maybe didn't call her a mudblood, but would make fun of her bushy hair and her big teeth and all of those things. And so she definitely had to persevere through all of that. And at work, we would call that sexual harassment.
So I feel that, I mean, she didn't let it get to her, which was also unrealistic, because majority of the times it ends up breaking people. But, you know, having gone through that and still be available and still be able to contribute and understand what other people are going through without expecting anything like that from others, I think she was too generous.
I feel like she has so many of the characteristics that embody the leader, embody the team player, embody just like everything that we are learning to try to become. And then when you look at the actual characters that get more screen time or what have you, they just don't have those qualities. And I love, Shruti, your point on saying how like she just didn't expect anything in return for everything that she's contributing. Like that takes so much, I don't know what the right word, maybe courage or selflessness or
magnanimity.
Yeah, there's just like so much there, which is really cool to see from the outside looking in. Haven't dissected all the characters, so some of the movies obviously they don't portray the characters the right way from what I hear, but Hermione is she's a pretty good character. It's pretty wild.
On the flip side, I do think Hermione gets into some trouble with her relating, because she is a little like I don't know if it's insensitive or unaware of her constant hand raising, how that might make other people in the class feel. And so I think one thing in the workplace, it's really important, and we definitely talk about this in leadership foundations, and anytime you take like unconscious biasness training or anything like that, is people have different preferences for when they want to speak up, how they want to speak up. And I think Hermione always raising her hand, always being the first to answer, just because she knows she wants to say it, versus sometimes stepping back and letting someone else take the stage, letting someone else be the one to contribute. I do think that could have been a way for her to strengthen her leadership abilities, relate more to other classmates, and kind of avoid some of the teacher's pet negative meanness that they did send to her, because she never let anyone else have that chance. Because yes, she was brilliant. She knew the answer. No one doubted that she knew the answer. So occasionally she could have let other folks have that moment to get some house points.
And how about that moment, the first time we saw Hermione in this pink ballroom dress? I forget who was her date that night.
Victor Crumb.
Yeah, Victor.
Yes,
who's Victor, the big Crumb. Big muscles with the facial hair. And
Vic the Dick, as I like to call him.
Oh, no.
So I personally feel like till that time, we all had like an idea about Hermione, and that night, like when she appears on screen, it changed like totally. Like we knew that she could look beautiful in the worldly sense, but at the same time, she was like, even if I dress the best, like it doesn't really take away from who I am. She never let that dress get the better of her, or that look, that hair bunned up, get the better of her. She was herself, even in that situation.
Yeah, especially Ron gives her such a hard time in that book about fraternizing with the enemy.
Ron, so, Ron, you know, was an absolute jerk bag in that.
He was,
I hated
so jealous.
That.
He wasn't sure that he loved her yet. He was like, "What are
that's,
these?
That's
what
his
are
fault.
These feelings?"
That's his fault. You can't project that onto Hermione. She's looking good. She got a good date. Like they're just there to relax and have a
her
good
hair
time.
With a spell, which I would love to have that spell.
Oh, I didn't know that she did that. That's cool. Pretty cool.
but my point is that she. Ron is giving her such a hard time fraternizing with the enemy, Harry's enemy in the Triwizard Tournament. But Hermione points out the whole point of the Triwizard Tournament is for us to make friends with witches and wizards in the international community. And so you creating him as the enemy is exactly the opposite of why we're here. And so she tries to compel in our fourth pillar, the vision of what the Triwizard Tournament is all about to Ron. He won't have it, clearly very stubborn, very jealous. We could have a whole pod about the lack of Ronald's leadership capabilities. But she tries her best to connect him back to the point. Harry, I think, does a good job of understanding and building those relationships. Obviously, Fleur loves him. Victor is a good friend at the end of it. And Cedric, clearly they came together at the end. A little too late. But I do think Hermione was on point with that.
Sounds like we have something to learn ahead of Challenge for Charity Stanford weekend.
MBA at Anderson is your extended Triwizard tournament. Take it as an opportunity to mingle with the international students, make friendships. It is a sprint, and definitely we are here to compete with each other, but also bring the best in each other out. So I think, yeah, that's something Hermione definitely taught us.
Mm-hmm. So what do we think of Hermione's biggest leadership failure, or one of? I'm sure there's more than one, but something that our beautiful Hermione Jean did not do to the best of her ability. She could have taken some lessons from Ancona's leadership compass to improve that endeavor.
Yeah, so this is in relation to visioning. Maybe we can come back to this. I would actually make an argument that I think Harry's the best at visioning. Like I would say Hermione scores top marks for all of the other characteristics, but for visioning, I think Harry might win. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. But an example of where Hermione fails with her vision is when she does like her spew campaign. She finds out about that there's these house elves that live at Hogwarts. They're the ones that keep the castle clean. They're the ones that cook all their food. The food doesn't just magically appear for them. That's how it seems. But someone had to cook it, and it's these house elves that are essentially enslaved at the castle, which is a horrible thing to find out. And she really takes it on herself to try to fix that, and creates this campaign to raise awareness about it. But no one is really interested in it. The students aren't interested in it. And the house elves aren't interested in it. And she fails to, I guess, captivate either side and get buy-in to her vision, because she doesn't understand like what each party, I think, wants out of this. The house elves, for the most part, enjoy their time at Hogwarts. Like, I think that's kind of what we see is that house elves, at least at Hogwarts, are treated well, and they actually have an okay relationship there. So she doesn't really get their buy-in, and the students don't really see what's in it for them to free the elves. And so it just ends up being a failure. But I think it's, a nice early form of activism from her, and maybe an opportunity for her to learn and in the future kind of refine her techniques and refine her vision.
Yes, one success that she does end up having, and I do, and obviously a lot of things go into this, not just spew, but Ron in the end, book 7, remembers the house elves and says, wait, the house elves, we have to let them know to get out of the castle before Voldemort attacks. And his caring and thoughtfulness for the house elves is what leads to their first kiss, which is a beautiful moment. And so she does, in a way, end up getting Ron to see the benefits of house elves. I think that his time with Creature and the way that they did form a beautiful relationship with Creature in the end, despite them not seeing eye to eye in the beginning, helped as well.
I feel like Harry is able to really express his vision towards people through his actions. And I think that's like a very powerful tool, especially when you're trying to convey your true vision. And I think one could be during the Triwizard Cup, when he saves the girl from being attacked underwater. I apologize for not knowing any of the names or anything, but that's the scene. What was it?
Fleur and her sister Gabrielle.
Yes, yeah. Like, Harry goes down and he's like, you know what? Like, this competition doesn't matter. There's something more than this. Like, the competition is about, community, connecting with other people, like you said, making friends and bringing the whole magic world, together. And I think that was like a huge, huge way to show that on like a huge scale where everyone's watching. Every single person is watching, and he does the unthinkable. And instead of going for the win, he goes for saving another individual. And then also, I think that was the one that like really stuck out to me. I just wanted to touch on visioning for Harry, because Harry's the GOAT, man. But, Hermione's pretty cool too. So.
And he's rewarded with points. Like, they gave him points for chivalry. So sometimes it pays off to go against the grain and to take a risk in your work environment or competition, and then you'll be rewarded. So I do think definitely we see that sometimes. The biggest risks can have the biggest rewards.
And with Harry, I think what also worked was that, of course, people were there to help him out, but he was also listening to their advice. He was an open listener. I think that was a big quality. So even if he didn't understand anything, if Hermione was there to advise him, or his godfather, Sirius Black, and even Dumbledore, I think, helped him see things from people's perspectives and, put them together and be a good visionary.
Well, we hit on so many interesting points today. I think there's so many fun things about Hermione's leader and Ancona's compass. Thank you, Ancona, whoever you are, for inventing it. I think we can all learn a lot about sense making, inventing, relating, and visioning to help us through our careers or through the next fantasy book we decide to write. So wrapping up today, I thought it'd be fun to share one of my favorite quotes. It's a curious thing, Harry, but perhaps those who are best suited to power are those who have never sought it. Those who, like you, have leadership thrust upon them and take up the mantle because they must and find to their surprise that they wear it well. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Shruti, John, Jody, thanks for being here to chat today.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
It was lots of fun, especially for the newbie.
Hopefully you learned something today, John.
And that wraps up our very first episode on the A-Suite podcast. We really hope you enjoyed and resonated with our episode on Harry Potter and how it relates to the Ancona leadership model. Big takeaway for me is, regardless of if you're fighting the dark arts or trying to lead a team in a business setting, there's always room for improvement on our leadership skills. Whether it be sharpening our sense-making, visioning, relating, or inventing, there's always something more that we can be doing. So I challenge you all to go out there and become better leaders. I also wanted to give a huge shout out to our hosts this evening, Jody Christensen, Katie Schiff, Shruti Pandey, and John Lee. Thank you all so much for sharing your insights as well as your passion for Harry Potter. And another huge shout out to our executive audio director, Alyssa Donovan. She's killing it behind the scenes. And we really appreciate her work. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, please tell us about it. Send us an email at theasuitepodcast@gmail.com. And also, leave a review on your favorite podcast app. Thank you all so much for listening today. We hope to see you next time here on the A-Suite Podcast. Signing off, go Bruins.